Hello. This is the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper for the week ending Friday the 25th of September 2015 with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle. Your readers today are Nikki Baring.
Hello.
Richard Martin.
Hello.
And Norma York.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Tom Williams. The main headlines this week are Contest Spurns Public Opinion, Visions Invited to Reshape City, and Council Ordered to Reveal Details. So may we have the story behind the first headline, please, Nikki?
Which is Contest Spurns Public Opinion. Public views will be excluded from a design contest for multi-million pound plans to rebuild Winchester station area. Civic chiefs have approved a brief for firms vying to develop station approach amid concerns from architects and environmental groups. But lawyers have warned that taking on residents' views in such a competition would breach new EU procurement rules. City council officers, who have already held several consultation sessions, defended their record and said the contest would allow experts to choose between five designs rather than presenting one for public feedback. The brief, set by Cabinet last week, envisages land between Sussex Street, Carfax, and Andover Road, Cattle Market, as a new business and transport hub, inviting architects to creatively tackle the needs of residents, workers, and visitors. Chris Higgins of the City of Winchester Trust said the paper was too prescriptive. He joined the Liberal Democrats in calling for a study into how people move through the area. Corporate Director Steve Tilbury said, "The whole thing is at what point do we start to say, let's create positive change, as opposed to simply analysing everything for so long that actually we've lost the ability to deliver what we want to deliver. It's better to know everything, but almost nobody starts from that position." Cabinet agreed to drop a specific demand for 360 parking spaces on the Carfax site, adding a section highlighting the importance of carbon efficiency after a plea from Winchester Action on Climate Change. Questioned over the consultation, Antonia Perkins, head of policy, said, "We're hoping that although members of the public can't actually vote on the design, some of their views have been put forward in the design brief. A short list of architects will be drawn up in November, with designs for the Carfax site due by January. They will go on show in February, but public comments will not be taken."
And the second headline on a similar theme, Visions Invited to Reshape City. The redevelopment of Station Approach has the potential to eclipse many other projects set to change Winchester over the next decade. Shops in Silver Hill, sports courts in a new leisure centre, and housing estates like Pitt Manor pale in comparison to this comprehensive redevelopment of the city's northern gateway. Only the construction of 2,000 homes at Barton Farm is likely to have a bigger impact. Winchester City Council has launched a design contest expected to produce five separate visions for the area, spanning from the Andover Road railway bridge through Cattle Market car park and the busy station junction called the Carfax. But before these designs can be shown to the expert panel, which will recommend the best scheme, civic chiefs must first tell architects what they're looking for. That design brief, approved last week, demands a scheme of publicly owned office space, housing, parking and shops, improving access for pedestrians, cyclists and motorists, and helping traders. But it has attracted criticism from some architects and environmental groups. Chris Higgins of the City of Winchester Trust said the paper appeared to prioritise finance over good design and could stifle architecture by specifying the size of offices and car parks. He said, "You would be undermining if you don't appreciate these aspects of the architectural challenge." Kevin Warren, the council's head of estates, said that unlike controversial dealings over the Brooks Centre in the late 1980s, the Guildhall does not have to seek the best financial deal. Instead, the jury will pick a viable scheme which gives best consideration to the city's interests. Another concern raised at Cabinet was a lack of a master plan revealing how people move through the area and the impact of other factors such as network rail projects or a proposed student housing block opposite the station. Chris Gillam of Winchester Friends of the Earth said, "The failure of the council so far to take the issue of traffic reduction, air pollution and public health seriously means that it is likely to face significant legal and financial consequences in the next 2 to 3 years. Cabinet agreed to include carbon emissions in the brief, scrapping demands for 360 Carfax parking spots. The panel is set to include a local councillor, an architect based outside Winchester, a county council architect, a local design expert, someone from the City of Winchester Trust, and other professionals. Firms will be invited to submit plans for the whole site, plus detailed designs of the Carfax area and public realm works. The winner will put together a planning application for Carfax and may be invited to develop the cattle market area. Onlookers will hope that joined-up thinking ensures station approach, a population influx at Barton Farm, and shopping renaissance at Silver Hill will work in harmony."
More about the council. Council ordered to reveal details. Winchester City Council has been ordered to publish financial data behind its dealings over the controversial Silver Hill development. The Information Commissioner has said civic chiefs failed to meet the public interest when it withheld figures on the grounds of commercial confidentiality. Details to be released include developer TH Real Estate's overall costs and profits related to the 2014 scheme, which has been defeated in the courts, swapping a bus station and cut price flats for more shops. Councillor Kim Gottlieb, leader of the Anti-Silver Hill Winchester Deserves Better campaign, said the information could give an ammunition to other legal challenge but could equally leave opponents underwhelmed. It comes from the Freedom of Information request made by campaign supporter Judith Martin. The Commissioner found that the majority of this information is rightly confidential, but some must be disclosed in the public interest. Figures to be released include the net development value and developer TH Real Estate's profit forecast, as well as market values of flats in the scheme. Broad construction costs and car parking details. Finer details to remain confidential include estimated shop rental values, land price, and specific construction costs on the grounds that they would prejudice commercial negotiations with the developer, formerly known as Henderson. Information Commissioner Christopher Graham said disclosure would allow the public to understand whether the council had managed the proposed development in a competent manner. He said the commissioner is not satisfied that the council has attached sufficient weight to the public interest in disclosing the information. The report says there are a number of factors which greatly increase the value in disclosing information on the decision-making process and in particular on the spending of public money and whether the council obtained the best deal. Ms. Martin said, "Like a great many people, I want to know why, and in their 2014 proposal, Henderson dropped the obligation to provide 100 affordable homes as well as other aspects of the social element of the development that had been agreed." Councillor Stephen Godfrey said he hoped greater clarity on the rules would be set a precedent for transparency over the 2009 scheme. Asked whether the council should have done more to establish what was in the public interest, he said, "If you want to keep a secret, you don't tell anyone you've got it." The council has been ordered to publish the information by October the 22nd. It comes amid delays to the independent report into the council's handling of this scheme. A spokesman said the council has received no timetable for the publication of the review.
Now we continue with the obituary notices, and the following deaths have been announced. Cox, Rachel Cox, peacefully at Royal Hampshire County Hospital, aged 85. Doe, Raymond Thomas Doe, at Freshwater, formerly of Week, aged 93. Rogers, Douglas James Rogers, aged 90. Whitehead, Captain David Whitehead. And Young, Andy Young, aged 57. Christian comment is this week is read by Nikki. Thank you, Nikki.
And today from Rosemary A. Baker, headed The F Word, Importance of Forgiveness to Faith. Wednesday was the Jewish feast of Yom Kippur, known in English as the Day of Atonement, one of the most important days in the Jewish calendar. It comes 10 days after Rosh Hashanah, the Jewish New Year. These 10 days are known as the Days of Awe, a period of repentance when Jews ask God's forgiveness for the previous year's transgressions. One ritual observed by some is to walk together to a river or the sea and empty one's pockets into the water, symbolically casting out their sins. Many of the world's religions promote forgiveness. For some, it is an integral part of their belief system and a person's relationship with God. For others, forgiveness is important to achieve the inner peace that allows spiritual enlightenment. Faiths often dedicate specific festivals or periods of the year to repentance and seeking forgiveness from God and other people, with the faithful engaging in practices like fasting and confession, or more symbolic rituals like throwing stones into a river. So how fundamental is this concept to religion? A Christian's life starts with baptism, a symbolic way to wash away sin. According to the Bible, God's creation was perfect, but the devil tempted Adam and Eve and sin entered the world. This gave rise to the concept of original sin, which separates mankind from God, and the idea that they need to be reconciled. This reconciliation is known as atonement, at one meant, and it was achieved through the death of Jesus on the cross, where he is believed to have said the words, "Father, forgive them, for they do not know what they are doing," referring to those who crucified him. This extreme act of forgiveness is at the heart of Christianity, and there are many ways to practice it. "Forgive, and you will be forgiven," Jesus said. Much like today, Jesus' message of forgiveness was central to past Christian communities who worshipped in local parishes. But forgiveness is not just a Christian business. Atonement with God and harmony between individuals are also at the heart of the Jewish religion, as we have seen. One of the major objectives of fasting during the month of Ramadan is to show repentance and seek God's forgiveness. Equally, human beings are called on to be forgiving towards each other. Other traditions emphasize the importance of forgiveness between human beings. The Hindu scriptures describe forgiveness as the one supreme peace. Buddhism says that to achieve happiness, we have to be able to forgive and let go of anger. This sums up the essential truth for all human beings and is held as a central tenet for all the great faiths.
Now we move to letters to the editor, and the first letter is read by Richard. Thank you, Richard.
And in case you've not had enough on Silver Hill, here's some more. This is from Councillor Gottlieb, and it's entitled Fears for Surgery. Sir, the main excuse given by the City Council as to why it can't consider an alternative scheme for Silver Hill is that it would delay the development for years or even decades. Now, it suits to put the boot on the other foot. Indications from the Council are that the development of the proposed new St Clement's surgery will happen pronto, if not just over the weekend. Neither scenario rings true. In the case of Silver Hill, it all depends upon who is managing the process and their objectives. But even with a new concept, confirmed after the extent and significance of the archaeology has been established, it should take no more than a couple of years to turn around. For a scheme that should grace the city for several lifetimes to come, the delay is insignificant. In the case of the new St Clement's surgery, which will be built on the upper Brook Street car park, the concern is even more immediate and pressing, particularly for its 17,000 patients. It says on the council's website that work on Silver Hill could start in earnest early next year, i.e. 3 to 4 months away. Being in the middle of the site where the bus station is meant to be, the existing St Clement's Surgery would need to be one of the first buildings to be demolished. The problem is that not only has no work started on the Upper Book Street site, but that the planning permission for the new surgery previously granted has expired. What with other things that need to be sorted out, the new surgery is 2 to 3 years away from being ready for operation. Something time-wise doesn't figure. No one in the council is contemplating putting the surgery and its patients on the street. However, my request for confirmation that the council will proceed with the development of the new surgery, irrespective of what happens at Silver Hill, has yet to be provided. Neither has the confirmation I and Ward Councillor Rose Burns have asked for, that in no circumstances will the surgery be obliged to leave their old premises until the new premises are completely ready. Watch this space. Kim A. Gottlieb, Winchester City Council for Itchen Valley.
And this is a letter from David Woodier, a retired undertaker from Chandler's Ford. It's headed Shocking Cost. Sir, a few weeks ago you printed two excellent letters calling into question the outrageous charges imposed to enter Winchester Cathedral. At the time I remarked to my wife that doubtless we would have a reply from the bishop himself seeking to justify these charges. Of course, this is impossible bearing in mind that the fact that the Church of England is one of the country's richest organisations with a vast property portfolio and massive rental income. Much of this has been gifted historically by people wanting to fast-track their souls to heaven, whatever they perceive the mirage to be. So far, I see no reply. Deduct the cost of the stamp from the £7.60 a head entry fee, but perhaps that is asking too much. Perhaps they are so ashamed of their mercenary attitude, or more likely, they know there is no way this policy can be defended. I recall that one writer compared the situation at Worcester Cathedral, which is free and open. Another rightly pointed to the appalling effects this charging doubtless has on the overall balance of tourist interest in the city. Many visitors must travel home feeling ripped off by Winchester as a city. I have seen myself many groups turning away from the entrance having stood to debate the appalling cost of entry clearly displayed on the boards. For my own part, born and bred in the city, I just feel so ashamed that we seek to treat visitors and locals in this way. Is it so wrong to seek to change to enter any religious building? Sorry, I repeat that again. Is it so wrong to seek to charge any to enter any religious building, large or small? It is so unwelcoming. But clearly the bishop cannot see this, or he is just lying low, praying that the publicity will go away and the press will be, as usual, I fear, intimidated into not covering this local appalling example of church greed and falsehood. David Woodier.
And one from Francis Baring, my husband, in Warnford, headed Where's the Merit? Sir, I was interested to see the advertisement in the Chronicle on September the 10th seeking a planning officer for a local borough council. The successful applicant will have an unspecified degree, be a good communicator and a team player with experience in development management. Significantly, there is no requirement for any background in study of architecture nor its practical application. Experience in building, surveying or construction are deemed unnecessary, as is any form of aesthetic qualification. This will come as no surprise to anyone who has battled with local planners in the past and is evidenced by featureless monstrosities such as the new Premier Inn in Winnell, which is reminiscent of Eastern Bloc brutalism. The Silver Hill development may have its regeneration merits, but the images shown to date are grotesque in their lack of imagination and architectural merit. Planning decisions have long-term implications and surely must be taken by officers with some form of qualifications. Otherwise, we remain at the mercy of subjective opinions backed up by a clipboard. Francis Baring, Warnford.
And we're back to the charging at the cathedral, in this letter from Susan Morrow. Sir, I'm writing in reply to the recent letters regarding the entry fee to the cathedral. I can't begin to imagine how much it costs to run this iconic building, but it must be astronomical. As a local, I find the entry fee remarkably good value. Recently, I took two of my grandchildren, who at under 16 years with a paying adult went free. I paid £7.50. These tickets can be used for 1 year for general admission, which for my own ticket works out at less than 15 pence a week. An absolute bargain. Maybe not such a bargain for our visitors, but come on, all you locals, take advantage of this.
This is a letter from Harvey Cole, and it's regarding the traffic in city centre already worse. Sir, an unwelcome feature of the Winchester scene is the traffic seize up in mid-afternoon, which seems to be getting worse. Peak traffic flows have long exceeded the capacity of the Andover Road, City Road, Stockbridge Road junction and defeated the ingenuity of the traffic engineers in phasing the changes in the traffic lights. Last Friday, the lights just below the railway bridge went through three complete sets of changes. Not a single vehicle passed them while they were green, and not a single pedestrian crossed the road while they were red. This is where there are ambitious plans for commercial activity in homes, and one day there may be hundreds, if not thousands, of daily journeys to and from Barton Farm. It would be interesting to know how all this extra activity will be accommodated. And there is a picture above it of that said junction, looking pretty stationary as it is, by Harvey Cole from Clifton Road, Winchester.
And this from Enda Smythe. Cassan a delight. Sir, it was with great delight that I read in the Chronicle of September the 10th that the City Council plans to invest in revamping and giving the Cassan block on St George's Street a facelift. About 2 years ago, I addressed the town forum on the subject and presented the elected members with a petition signed by customers of shops within the block. My hope is that council members will approach local professionals and consult with the businesses there before embarking on the work. Keep it local. It would be great if something of the international feel of the place was nurtured. And that from Enda Smythe, Maytree Close, Badger Farm, Winchester.
Davina Stevenson says, I'm losing faith. I'm writing to express my infuriation at the decision of the Winchester City Council Planning Committee on Thursday, September the 17th, to grant permission to Drew Smith to build more houses on Topfield in Kingsworthy. The main reasons I feel this are, one, this decision goes against the LPP2, which was only agreed the previous day. Two, the people of Kingsworthy have been consulted and do not agree with this development. Three, the local Kingsworthy Parish Council is against this development. Four, no discussion took place on the integration of affordable housing into the local community, which means there will be a large block of affordable houses on Topfield with no integration whatsoever. Integration was discussed at length for the Loveton Lane site, which also had planning permission granted during the same meeting, and which is the preferred site of the people of Kingsworthy and also of the Kingsworthy Parish Council. Five, there was no discussion of the fact that there is a Village Green application outstanding for Topfield, which should be concluded before any consideration of building can take place. I feel disillusioned with this planning process for the above reasons, and especially because, during the public consultation, Topfield was the least preferred site, and in spite of this, permission has been granted for Kingsworthy to lose its last area of open space. That's from Davina Stevenson of Ilex Close, Kingsworthy.
Nursing in crisis. Sir, a crisis is looming in our hospitals, our care homes and our community nursing services, which must be averted now. Nurses recruited after 2011 from outside Europe will be removed from the UK after they have spent 6 years here, simply because they are not earning at least £35,000 because of this government changes to immigration rules. This new rule makes no sense in a profession such as a nursing, where few can hope to achieve such a wage. Across the South East, hundreds of nursing staff could be affected, in turn damaging services and compromising the safety of patients. We are in the middle of a severe nursing shortage in the South East, and our nurses that have been recruited from abroad are essential to us being able to continue to provide care to patients. They were recruited at a cost of thousands of pounds to the NHS and are filling gaps in our workforce that we cannot fill ourselves due to previous cuts that were made to nursing training places. The nurses have come to our region to care for us, our families and our friends. We need to keep them, as without their help, our services would grind to a halt. Therefore, the Royal College of Nursing is calling for the government to act now to address this anomaly, by ensuring nurses are amongst the professions exempt from this rule. We also want an increase in nurse training places so that we are less reliant on other countries. And this is from Rachel Greaves, Chairman of the Royal College of Nursing South East Regional Board and RCN Council Member.
And this from Pip Billington, a rent rebellion. Sir, why are Winchester students being so lily-livered? We keep reading that local rents are soaring and the students are being crippled by debt, Chronicle September 17. Why don't the students unite and simply refuse to pay these greedy rents? If all students wrote to their landlords and announced that from October the 1st, they would each pay a fair rent of, say, £65 a week, it seems many pay in excess of £100 in Winchester and £200 in London, and change their standing orders accordingly. What are the landlords going to do about it? They can hardly evict them all, and if the students stand firm together, at the sign of any evictions, they should then reduce their payments again by £5 a week until the evictions stop. Haven't any of them read The Grapes of Wrath? We all know that there are landlords out there who own hundreds of student units. It is a disgrace that they are growing obscenely rich on the back of a future generation's debt. The universities should support rent resistance and do much more to stop greedy profiteering. Pip Billington, Kingsgate Road, Winchester.
If you wish to contact the Hampshire Chronicle, you can telephone 01962 860 836. That's 01962 860 836. You can email news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk. Or you can write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. Now we look back, beginning with the news from 200 years ago. Thank you, Richard.
So this is from September the 25th, 1815. Boxing match. London. Monday afternoon, a boxing match for 10 guineas a side was fought at Golders Green, beyond Hampstead, between two young men named Gupp, a butcher, and Hales, a costermonger, which afforded great sport to those who delight in seeing determined courage of a brutal description, for the fight continued nearly 2 hours with great ferocity till the 57th round, when Hales slipped his foot and fell backwards on his head, by which he was so stunned that he was scarce able to appear in time. He, however, fought 14 other rounds, at the end of which he became unable to meet his opponent in time.
Wow.
And secondly, beggars arrested. Not a single beggar is to be found in the streets of the populous town of Belfast. As soon as one makes his appearance, he is apprehended and, if able, is compelled to work. To do this more effectually, an extensive building is to be erected under the name of the House of Industry. The young and aged are provided for in a suitable manner.
100 years ago, September the 25th, 1915, Bulgaria prepares. London. Just now, everyone is watching with the keenest interest the development of the events in those Balkan states which have so far maintained a neutral position. Bulgaria, which is, it is understood, has been diplomatically approached by both the Allies and Germany, has for long kept Europe on tenterhooks as to what her final decision would be, and it required no expert eye to see that it would have important and far-reaching consequences. Things have come nearer to a head this week by the news that Bulgaria has decided to mobilise. And the second item is girl injured, Old Alresford. An unfortunate accident happened on Sunday morning to a little girl, 8 years of age, named Barbara Gulliver, resulting in a broken thigh and several bruises to the head. While swinging on the village green with an older companion, standing up vis-à-vis fashion, she released her hold to brush her hair from her eyes and lost her balance and fell heavily to the ground. Police Constable Hill, who fortunately happened to be on duty only a short distance away, immediately went to the child's assistance and carefully carried her home.
50 years ago, excuse me, September 25th, 1965, Vietnam anger. There were stormy scenes at last Saturday's meeting in King Alfred's College, Winchester, of the United Nations Association Southern Region Council. During a debate on a resolution deploring the actions of the United States in Vietnam, the regional president, Sir William Hayter, KCMG, MA, threatened to resign. Sir William, who is a governor of Winchester College, the warden of New College, Oxford, and a former ambassador in Moscow, strongly opposed a clause urging the association to call on the British government to disassociate itself from supporting US policies and actions in the Vietnam crisis. And a second item, mansion destroyed. Special precautions were taken to see that a priceless collection of wines and spirits in an underground cellar were kept safe as a 40-room Queen Anne mansion near Basingstoke was deliberately burnt down on Friday of last week. Heriot House, the ancestral home of the Gervois family, has been knocked down on the instructions of the present squire, Mr. John Lovis Gervois, who found it was too large and too expensive to live in. He is having a more modern home built on exactly the same site. Before Heriot House was built, in 1704, a Jacobean manor house stood on the site. This too was destroyed by fire, accidentally.
And from 25 years ago, September the 21st, 1990. New town plan. Eagle Star's proposals for a new market town at Mitchell Davis Station will be put forward as part of the consultation process for the Hampshire County Structure Plan in early November, the company has confirmed. The plan is for 5,000 houses, with all the facilities of a self-contained community: educational, health, leisure, shopping, offices and light industry. Eagle Star, which already owns the land, has already stressed that quality of design is at the forefront of its proposals. The company intends retaining overall control of design and says an important part of the Mitchell Davis Station market town will be the provision of a significant proportion of affordable housing. And secondly, stag rioting. Seven men who took part in a pre-wedding stag party riot, which brought violence to the streets of Winchester last year, were given suspended prison sentences and community service orders at Winchester Crown Court. Judge McLaren Webster QC told them that they had brought turmoil, trouble and near havoc to the city. Conduct as such as you indulged in cannot be tolerated, he said. Judge Webster added that the damage caused was remarkably low and injuries to police officers and others thankfully slight. It is a tribute to the restraint of others and the conduct and control of the police in the face of very difficult odds, he said.
Hampshire Chronicle comment this week is read by Norma and will be followed by First Person, read by Richard.
Why no independent people on jury? Station Approach will be a huge development scheme for Winchester. It could end up dwarfing Silver Hill. A growing number of people are concerned that the City Council could commit the same blunders alleged over Silver Hill and Brook Centre, that is not listening to the public. Such criticisms over Station Approach are wide of the mark. The council is legally obliged under European Union rules to exclude public opinion when considering five schemes that will be shortlisted for a jury. But the Chronicle has concerns that there is no one on the jury who could be said to represent independent public opinion. It would have gone some way to allaying the fears.
And Khalid Aziz writes about social enterprise and austerity. Sorry. What happens when austerity... Oh, dear. I'll get the word right in a minute. I do apologise. Austerity. What happens when austerity cuts mean a lowering in the provision of services to some of the most vulnerable in society? Well, something curious and uplifting, as I discovered when I was kindly invited to give out certificates to this year's crop of graduates from the Hampshire School of Social Entrepreneurs. On a wet, it was raining stair rods, early evening last week, more than 100 turned up at the United Church in Jury Street, Winchester. This splendid building has been doubling up as a useful community space for many years and is an exemplar of what many churches, struggling with the upkeep of their building, should be considering. Here were a range of people, all of whom had spent a year developing businesses for which they all had a great passion. It's all too easy to dismiss social enterprise as some vague, wishy-washy movement populated by well-minded but essentially woolly-headed do-gooders. Nothing could be further from the truth. Whilst one of two of the graduates on first encounter might, to the unthinking observer, be cast into the knit-your-own-yoghurt bracket, on greater analysis you could see that there was real work being done here, and in the main it was with businesses that were sustainable. In other words, they could stand on their own feet and grow. So how does it work? Quite simply, you have an idea that you think will answer a need in society, and then you get the help required to make it happen. That help comes through organisation. The School for Social Entrepreneurs is run under the aegis of Action Hampshire, and they employ people to manage the graduates. Then there's money. Grants of £4,000, sponsored by Lloyds Bank, and, possibly the most important, volunteer mentors and external lecturers who come in to speak on specialist subjects. This combination breathes life into the businesses by giving knowledge and confidence to the entrepreneurs. The businesses are often driven by personal experience. A young woman who has a sibling and a child with autism now promotes a business dedicated to ending the loneliness of the autistic world. A lawyer, appalled at the on-the-ground effects of the cuts in legal aid, sets up an alternative service to help those wrestling with the judicial system. A woman who herself benefited from the healing powers of contact with horses sets up Healing Hoofs with a staff of 8 horses and a few human volunteers to help in rehabilitating those recovering from physical and mental crises. A singer who is now using the power of song as therapy to lift those with long-term chronic conditions, and so it goes on. You'd have been hard-pressed to find a single business that didn't have a demonstrable benefit at a relatively low cost. The School of Social Entrepreneurs graduates all made powerful presentations about what their year had meant to them. For many, it had involved significant personal growth. Rising above the individual triumphs, there seemed to be a greater point too. Some of these graduates might have been regarded a year ago as themselves victims. Now there is no sign of victimhood. They are filling a gap left by government cuts. Are they as good as taxpayer-funded professionals? Probably too soon to tell. Should we rely on this model to replace all the gaps left by cuts? Probably not. But while the country appears to be polarising itself into nasty cutters on one hand and sympathetic soak-the-rich tax hikers on the other, surely this model is worth greater examination. The Hampshire School of Social Entrepreneurs is one of only 9 in the county. Arguably, ours is a county of lesser need, but we do have our disadvantage, which feels even worse when you are surrounded by affluence. Encouraging self-sufficiency should be applauded. The alternative is dependency.
Belgorum's alternative look at the news this week has 4 items, and the first is headed Brillo Pad Assassin Tarnishes Golden Chain. Winchester is the oldest mayoralty in England after London, and Belgorum hears the ceremonial gear has been through the wars. Most used is the heavy chain worn on all the mayor's business, from military parades to WI coffee mornings. One former First Citizen, believing the mayoral bling to be a bit scruffy, is said to have gone at it with a Brillo pad, corroding its gold coating. Mayor Angela Clear remained tight-lipped on the identity of the scouring pad assassin, but confirmed that, perhaps unsurprisingly, it was a man.
And the next one, book should be a real draw. Belgarum is pleased to hear that Andrew Rutter is making progress on a new book. Mr. Rutter was for many years the conservation architect at Winchester City Council, and nobody knows the city's historic fabric better. His book, Winchester, Heart of a City, was a superb record of the city's heritage, produced with the City of Winchester Trust in 2009. Mr. Rutter recently staged an exhibition of his fine drawings of the city at the Quaker Meeting House in Colebrook Street as part of the Heritage Open Day. His idea is to produce a book of drawings showing Winchester streets and views from upper, often private windows, the views that few people know. He tells Belgarum, "Age is beginning to tell, but the good news is that I can still draw and recently did a drawing 4 feet 6 inches long, in colour, from Mozzetta's top floor in King's Head Yard, looking out at the cathedral. Two delightful children spotted part of a drawing as I walked past the cathedral. I stopped and showed them one or two, and they asked me if I had drawn the pyramids."
New faces can win Pizza the Action. Get it? The City Council has stepped up its efforts to integrate new students into communities like Stanmore and Winnall. And what better way to say hello than ask a few questions? Respondents can win pizzas and vouchers if they're able to give the answer to various questions, including who their local councillor is, how to go about getting in touch about council tax, and which day the bin lorry comes.
A picture of a group of yellow signs. You know the ones, the yellow ones that say caution wet floor. Is a heading, "Shopping Centre is suffering a leak problem." It turns out that it's not human excrement and overexcited charity workers, which Winchester's shoppers have had to sidestep lately. Those seeking refuge from the rain in the Brook Centre last week must have been disappointed to find another obstacle in their way. Buckets. Nearly a dozen holes began leaking in the roof, and on Wednesday, forcing managers to cover the floor in caution signs. The tiniest puddles were given signs, a welcome sight for the health and safety buffs. The Brooks was unavailable for comment.
The announcements this week start with What's On, and here are several events in and around Winchester. Saturday the 3rd and Sunday the 4th of October is Hampshire Harvest Weekend at Winchester Cathedral. There will be free entry to the cathedral all weekend from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. And on Sunday at 3:30, there will be a harvest service. On Tuesday the 6th of October, the cathedral lunchtime piano concert is from 1 p.m. to 2 p.m. and there will be a retiring collection. On Friday the 9th of October at the Theatre Royal Winchester, there is a triple bill of ballet at 7:30 p.m., Tickets are £23 and the box office number is 01962 840 440. That's 01962 840 440. On Sunday the 11th of October, Jimmy Carr is at the Mayflower Theatre Southampton in Funny Business. For further information and the box office, telephone 023 8071 1811. That's 023 8071 1811. And on Wednesday the 14th of October, in Winchester Cathedral at 7:30 p.m, the Friends Annual Lecture is given by David Starkey and is a talk on Winchester's role in the birth of Magna Carta. Tickets are £18 and the box office is 01962 857 275. That's 01962 857 275. Lighting Up Time ends on Friday the 25th of September at 6:54 a.m. and begins at 7 p.m. On Wednesday the 30th of September, it ends at 7:03 a.m. and begins at 6:46 p.m. If you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you have received from us, please telephone Irene Dowding on 01962 870 370. That's 01962 870 370. Now we continue with items of general news, and the first item is read by Nikki. Thank you, Nikki.
MP experiences difficulties faced by visually impaired. Meon Valley MP George Hollingbury walked blindfold with a dog through a busy town square on Friday to understand the challenges facing the visually impaired. The MP saw what life was like for a blind person as guide dog Walker helped him navigate the square in Wickham. Mr. Hollingbury described the 20-minute walk, judging traffic and watching his step, as an immensely humbling experience. The event, organised by the Guide Dogs charity, highlighted the lack of facilities for visually impaired people in the square. Even though I had Walker with me all the way, crossing roads in such a busy and noisy environment as the square made me very nervous indeed, Mr. Hollingbury said. But I tried to remember that these are the challenges that visually impaired people go through every day. My 20 minutes gave me just a little understanding of what those challenges are. Walker really was a brilliant companion, and guide dogs do a superb job helping people. The 18-month-old dog is one of hundreds trained by the charity, and is a photograph of George Hollingbury with one of those total blackout masks, so he really cannot see a thing, with obviously one of the dog handlers and trainer with him, attempting to get round Wickham with no sight.
Company gets £15,000 boost. Grant from Lloyd Webber Foundation will support actors with disabilities. A Winchester Theatre company is celebrating receiving a vital grant to help support its members with learning difficulties. The Blue Apple Theatre, founded in 2005, has been given a grant of £15,000 from the Andrew Lloyd Webber Foundation. The money will enable it to support members with learning difficulties, such as local actor Tommy Jessop. Mr. Jessop hosted an episode of BBC's Inside Out South recently, retelling his experiences as a performer with Down syndrome ahead of a Shakespeare production at the Theatre Royal. Mr. Lloyd Webber said the creative industry in the UK is thriving, but to retain this vibrancy, we need to support the talented young people of all backgrounds who are looking to take their first steps towards a career in the arts. I've been lucky enough to enjoy a successful career doing something that I love, and delighted that my foundation can support young creatives of the future. Blue Apple Theatre is currently staging Shakespeare's Much Ado About Nothing, and has published a poem discussing the intellectual disabilities of its actors. The company has won awards from its groundbreaking approach to theatre. In 2012, six of its actors became the first with Down syndrome to stage a professional production of Hamlet, touring their adaptation across the South. Later that year, it was named the 100th winner of the Queen's Award for Voluntary Service. Much Ado About Nothing is at London's RADA on September the 27th.
Bellringer's tribute for the monarch, and there's a picture of a group of bellringers with the sallies hanging down, and the sallies are the stripy bits on the rope that you pull, and they are from young to old. Villagers near Alresford gathered for a unique tribute earlier this month to mark the Queen's becoming the country's longest-serving monarch. Bellringers at St Michael's and All Angels in Cheriton sounded the bells in tribute to the Queen Elizabeth II at 7 p.m. on September the 9th. On that day, she had reigned for 63 years and 221 days, surpassing that of Queen Victoria, who died in 1901, only 25 years before the Queen was born. Craig Robb, captain of the Bellringers, told the Chronicle, "We rang a combination of rounds from kings, from treble to tenor, call changes, where the bells swap round in order, called by the ringleader, and queens, where the odd bell bells are rung from treble to tenor, followed by even bells rung from treble to tenor. Mr. Robb added, afterwards we enjoyed a toast to Her Majesty and after ringing snacks in Flower Pots Inn. A splendid evening was had by all.
A campaigner let to students. The woman who led a campaign against the studentification of Stanmore has rented her house on the estate to students. Amanda Chard spent months warning that the former council estate risked all-out war between residents and students if landlords continued to buy up family homes. Now she has moved to Badger Farm and leased her three-bed house in Drayton Street for £360 a week. It has led to allegations of hypocrisy from one of the ward's three city councillors, who felt her campaign damaged their efforts to integrate students into the community. Councillor Derek Green said, "It's rather hypocritical, isn't it? I'm very disappointed with her, personally. I didn't think she'd ever do something like that." Miss Chard brought a lot of people along with her to rally against the loss of family homes to students, he said, adding, "Now she's done exactly the same thing, which is very hypocritical." Ms. Chard declined to comment when she was approached by the Chronicle this week. Last year, Stanmore HMO lobby fought unsuccessfully to bring forward a clampdown on student landlords on the estate, predicting a surge of buyouts. A petition warning that the growing student population put the community at breaking point gathered more than 300 supporters. It's not far off all-out war between long-time residents who've been here for 15 and 20 years and students, Ms. Chard said last year. I keep imagining The Simpsons when they're going around with the pitchforks. Restrictions known as Article 4 direction, forcing landlords to secure planning permission before converting to houses in multiple occupation, HMOs, are due to be introduced next year. But Ward Councillor Jamie Scott said, I don't know if Article 4 will be effective, to be honest. It does nothing to say that these houses in the future will not be turned over to lets for students. He added, that seems to be quite a difficult thing. People are realising that wasn't ever going to be the case. Council leader Stephen Godfrey suggested this month that the measure could spread to other areas in Winchester University. As Winchester University's housing shortage leaves more freshers renting privately in Winnell, Highcliffe and Wick. Meanwhile, complaints of loud parties, overflowing bins and antisocial behaviour in Stanmore are beginning to re-emerge at the start of this academic year. But councillors are keen to highlight the positive reaction of most students to their welcome brochures. Council workers and residents have been visiting newcomers.
And I have a letter here from Steve Bryan, his letter from Westminster. Mild days and cold nights can only mean one thing. Conference season is almost upon us. Things kick off next week with the Labour Party in Brighton, followed by the Conservatives in Manchester, and then Parliament returns in a seemingly changed political landscape. The new Labour leader, Jeremy Corbyn, is someone I know well, having served with him on the Justice Select Committee for the majority of the last Parliament. We travelled together a number of times, and I enjoyed getting to know him. We may not agree on many things, and I suspect the next 5 years will be more political than the last, but he's a gentleman, and he believes passionately in public service. Whatever happens in the years ahead, I predict two things. British politics will be anything but the straight curve many commentators would have us believe, and my ballot for Prime Minister's Question Time tickets will be busier than ever. One of the first challenges of the new term came in the form of the Assisted Dying Bill. Thank you to so many of you for writing with your views on this sensitive and hugely controversial issue. After months of reading, meeting and thinking, I voted against the bill, having a second reading. It was a free vote on a matter of conscience, and I respect the opinions given to me on both sides, but in the end, I had to make a decision as our MP. I spoke in the debate and can't possibly cover all the arguments I made here, but as I said in the House, it seems to me we live in a world today obsessed by choice and consumerism. We want that career and the perfect family life, we want to shop every hour of the week, and now we want to choose how we die. I found myself agreeing with the Bishop of Bristol, who said how the sponsors of this bill presented it in part as a simple matter of individual choice. Choice, he said, being the great god of a consumerized society. And he hits the nail on the head, I think. The choice creates the burden. It doesn't set you free. I spoke to many health professionals ahead of this vote, and I actually do believe we have world-class palliative care in this country. But that's not the case everywhere, and it's partly fueling this desire for legal-assisted suicide. We must significantly up our game in respect of how we give end-of-life care, rather than handing out the right in law to take that life away. Finally, parents of school-age and soon-to-be summer-born children will be interested in a debate I spoke in last month. I've been a consistent supporter of a change in the Department for Education guidelines on when the state insists our little ones start primary school, and it seems we're getting somewhere. The government plans to consult later this year on a change which is very welcome. You can find more information about my continuing work as your local MP in Winchester and Westminster on 01962 79 110. And that's from Stephen Bryan.
Homelessness Service Award. Winchester City Council has become one of the first councils in the country to receive the government's Silver Standard for its work in tackling homelessness. The government's Gold Standard programme includes a peer review of the authorities' frontline services and applications for each of the 10 local challenges. Councillor Caroline Horrell, City Council portfolio holder for the housing, said, "I would like to congratulate the team for their excellent performance. Winchester City Council Housing Option Service has demonstrated that early intervention is a cost-effective way of preventing homelessness, which is a key priority for the council. We are very proud of achieving silver in the National Gold Standard programme and recognise that the award is not just about being awarded silver status, but shows that the Winchester City Council provides a fit-for-purpose frontline housing service for the homeless in collaboration with key partners such as the Trinity Centre and the Winchester Night Shelter."
Open day for centre. Winchester's Free Cancer Support Centre has opened its doors to schools, businesses and community groups to promote its service. Wessex Cancer Trust, based in St George's Street, offers advice and counselling to friends, family and patients. More than 2,000 visits have been made since its opening in early 2013. Services range from massage and clinical referrals to informal conversations and therapy. Nikki Roberts, a former client who went on to become manager, invited community groups, businesses and schools to see the facilities last Wednesday. She said, "We've had a busy and very positive 2 years. Cancer is no respecter of age, class or gender, and we see people from all walks of life at all stages, from diagnosis to treatment and out the other side, whether it's good news or not. It's so encouraging that we have seen so many people. We are really filling a gap that the NHS cannot hope to close. In fact, which is recognised by staff at Royal Hampshire County Council and in GP surgeries in this area, all of whom refer patients to us." Guests included Mayor of Winchester, Councillor Angela Clear, whose family experiences with cancer inspired her to raise money for 3 local hospices. She said, "I think it's fantastic. I knew the people that this was here, but having looked around and listened and talked to them, I now realise quite how much good they do and what they give to the people that come here. What would we do without these people?" And there's a lovely photograph of the Wessex Cancer Support Centre open day with Nikki Roberts in the centre, with staff and visitors. A lot of very happy, smiling, reassured women in this case. Oh, and one man at the back.
This is an invitation to a lecture on punctuation. The annual English Language Day lecture in Winchester will be on Tuesday, October the 13th at 7 p.m. in The Stripe. The lecture is arranged by the English Project to celebrate the language. Professor Christopher Mulvey will talk on a history of English punctuation. The Stripe Lecture Theatre is at King Alfred Campus on Sparkford Road and the doors open at 6:30. The lecture is free to journalists and readers alike.
Appeal to teen to come home. Police have become extremely concerned for the welfare of a Winchester schoolgirl who had yesterday been missing for 5 days. Jessica Horton, 15, was last seen on Friday night at a youth club in Wick and left without her asthma medication or money for food and shelter. The Westgate school pupil disappearance has sparked a police appeal, with thousands of people sharing her image on social media. On Tuesday, officers released CCTV images of her speaking with two men at Winchester railway station. The images were captured shortly after she was reported missing on Friday night. Police are reviewing footage and appealing for information to find out which train she may have taken. There is no suggestion of foul play. Detective Inspector Tim Ellison said, "We continue to carry out a number of inquiries to try and find Jessica. We have been out making house-to-house inquiries in the Wick area and distributing posters, and also speaking to friends and family to piece together where she might have gone. Our concern for Jessica is growing, and I repeat my appeal to her direct to get in touch with us and to let us know she's okay. She is not in any trouble. We just need to make sure that she is safe and well." Jessica, a Year 11 pupil, moved to Winchester in May. Police said she is familiar with Reading, Newbury and parts of Wiltshire. Catherine Marshall, Westgate's senior deputy headteacher, said she had made a really positive impact on the school. She said, "We are all really worried about Jess and would like her to know that she is not in any trouble. We just want her to come home. Her close friends and everyone else at school would like to appeal directly to Jess to come home and to be with the people who care about her." Jessica went missing from Wesley Methodist Church in Frawmond Road, Wick, at around 8 p.m. on Friday, September the 18th. She is described as white, 5'3" tall, petite build, and has long, light brown hair. Anyone with any information is asked to contact the Northern Investigation Team on 101, quoting Operation Woodcroft or crime reference number 441-5032-4746.
Jail for armed robber. A Winchester drug user has been jailed for 3 years after robbing a mother with a fake gun in a supermarket car park. Daniel McCauley, 25, of Trussell Crescent, Wick, approached Julie Peschall outside Aldi, in Winchester and stole her purse using a pistol wrapped in cling film. The father of one held the weapon at his waist as she tried to exit her car, Winchester Crown Court was told. Prosecutor James Kellam read from the victim's witness statement at the sentencing on Friday. "At this time, I was thinking to myself, this is some sad person with a toy gun," she said, describing the incident on July 26th. "My initial reaction was just to laugh and defuse the situation by saying, you must be joking, but common sense prevailed." McCauley insisted the gun was real, pointed it at her and stole the purse, the court heard, running away from the supermarket in Stockbridge Road before being stopped by Miss Peschall's son, Will, who had gone shopping with her. He and four members of the public restrained McCauley until the police arrived. Mr. Kellam said it was unclear whether the gun was deactivated or a replica. Robert Gray, mitigating, said McCauley had relapsed into using Class A drugs and offending after relationship troubles. He had a history of using cocaine, heroin and crack cocaine. There was a time when he wasn't living with his partner and their child. He was effectively homeless or sofa surfing, and then he started taking Class A drugs, and that's when he started to descend into a life of drug-taking, Mr. Gray said. In the last year, he's used, and these offences have been committed. It was McCauley's 26th court appearance, after a total of 47 previous offences, mostly for shoplifting. Deputy Circuit Judge Douglas Field activated two suspended sentences issued in May and July, handing down a sentence of 3 years in prison.
And in contrast, pantomime is back and full of beans. Winchester Theatre Royal has launched this year's Christmas pantomime, Jack and the Beanstalk. The theatre announced the cast and production team for this year's festive show from December the 8th to January the 3rd. Familiar faces will be joined by new names. Comedy actor Andy Medhurst, returns to play brother Silly Billy. Winchester favourite Julian Eardley is also returning as Dame Dotty Trot, having last performed at the Theatre Royal 3 years ago in Aladdin. Two more cast members from last year are back by popular demand. Audiences will enjoy booing Kate Russell-Smith as the giant's evil sister, Cruella Blunderbore. Local actress Rosanna Miles plays Jack's feisty girlfriend, Jill. Pantomimes at the Theatre Royal have been hugely successful, thanks in no small part to James Barry, who writes and directs them, making sure there is plenty of audience participation, slapstick and fun. Oh, yes, he does. And there's a photograph of the cast, appropriately dressed, and a very jolly-looking beanstalk.
Milestones arise for auctions event. The popular Auctions in a Day will reach a landmark in its next sale at Badger Farm Community Centre on Saturday, October the 3rd. Claire Whale and Bob Leggett, with their other halves, Fiona and John, started the auctions in September 2003 at Alsford Community Centre. Andrew Wilcox noticed the long queue on the street and offered to help. Since then, he has become a big part of the team. After 12 years, they've held 99 sales. So celebrations will be in order at Badger Farm Community Centre next month for the 100th auction. In 12 years, we have seen some wacky and wonderful lots going through our auction, including an authentic lock of Elvis Presley's hair and a complete dentist drill from a set from the late 19th century, said the organisers. Some highlights were the WW2 Paratroopers Berry, which went for £420, and an 18th century gold bracelet for £550, and a French paperweight for £600. Items for sale are accepted in the morning at 9:30 to 10:30 a.m. Viewing is from 12:30 p.m. and the auction starts at 2 p.m. What makes this unique is that all transactions are completed on the day and all lots removed by the end of the auction.
Mike, part of World Cup Drive. He is the former Peter Simmons college student who is hoping to help England win the Rugby World Cup. Immortalised in giant cartoon form on TV, Mike Brown, 30, is at heart of a call to bring the country together to back the England team. The Wear the Rose initiative has been started by England Rugby sponsor O2, featuring Mike and other key England players growing into giants with every fan that cheers them on. The current Harlequins fullback is expected to have a big impact in the tournament. Southampton-born, he was first called up to the national squad in 2007 and has now been capped 39 times for his country. Mike's former college was quick to send their support. We are extremely proud of what he has achieved. The whole college is rooting for him and the rest of the team in the World Cup. The campaign plans to get more fans involved in the upcoming tournament with the slogan, "Show it, wear it, share it, make them giants." It tasks members of the public to show their support for the team by getting them to hashtag #WearTheRose on social media, as well as watching England matches and wearing team shirts. England head coach Stuart Lancaster has rallied the whole country to get behind Mike and the squad, he said. The support we get is fantastic, and I'm sure that in this special year for rugby, our fans can be that difference. And there's a wonderful, extremely action-packed picture of Mike Brown hurtling with his ball being tackled by whatever team they're playing at the time.
Residents ruffled by stray peacock. And the story is accompanied by a photograph of a... If a peacock can look confused, this peacock looks confused. The appearance of a peacock in a Winchester neighbourhood has ruffled the feathers of residents. The bird made its home in the Week area outside the first Winchester Scout Hut in Fleming Road earlier this month. Since making its home there, the male peacock has caught the eye of neighbours and children at the YMCA Fairthorn Group Preschool in Fleming Road. Chairman of the first Winchester Scout Group, Dave Kesby, is baffled by how the bird came to Week. Mr. Kesby said, "I don't know why it's here. I genuinely can't think of anywhere that has peacocks here. Perhaps it's come from somewhere in Itchin Abbas. It's clearly familiar with humans because I had to get quite close to it to shoo it away from the scout hut." He added that he believes the bird is settling in well and life in Wick has a few notable perks, but wants the bird to go back to its home. Mr. Kesby added, it's a grassy area and it gets peace and quiet most of the time. It has food on site and lots of things in the grass to eat. I suspect the neighbours are also feeding it. We're worried that in a couple of weeks' time the scouts will be coming back from their programme and the preschool is getting more busy all the time and more children will want to play outside and there will be potential safety issues. This is not the first time a peacock has caused a stir near Winchester. In March, villagers in Itchen Abbas tried to find a mate for a peacock called Percy after his mating calls caused a nuisance.
Priests Syria talk. A Winchester priest who flew out to Syria to build bridges across Fayce is set to give a talk on the war-torn country. The Reverend Andrew Ashdown, the Bishop of Winchester's interfaith advisor, has travelled to Syria twice in the past to meet religious leaders and see firsthand the country's humanitarian crisis. His illustrated talk at Prior's Hall in Cathedral Close will explore the conflict's background and the current situation, with time for questions and answers. The talk is on Tuesday, October the 22nd at 7 p.m. Entry is free, but donations are welcome.
Donations flood in for refugees crisis. The people of Winchester showed their generosity in the face of the refugee crisis with a huge collection in the city. Donors turned out in their droves on Sunday to donate toiletries, shoes, warm clothing for camps on the Greek island of Kos. Now the woman behind the local Kos kindness appeal is looking for a warehouse to cope with the flood of supplies. Roshi Ingram from Longstock said people travelled from as far as Blandford and Bournemouth, bringing vans full of goods to help what she described as a hub for Hampshire and beyond. We were expecting probably a third of what turned up. It's unbelievable the amount of stuff we've got. I'm in awe of everybody's generosity and kindness. The campaign has raised more than half of its 2,500 fundraising target in a few days, with £100 cash donations made on Sunday. Donations are still being welcomed by groups and businesses around Winchester District. It's become a big operation, so my job is looking for a warehouse, Ms. Ingram added. The group, working with We Are Winchester Business Network, is seeking space near Winchester or Andover to unpack, lay out and repackage donations to be shipped to Kos. Meanwhile, Winchester City Council is waiting to hear from the government whether it will be asked to take any refugee families. Leader, Councillor Stephen Godfrey, said, "We do not expect that Syrian refugees, however many we are asked to support, will have any noticeable impact on our normal services." And there's some lovely photographs of Andy Salter, We Are Winchester, and Roshi Ingram sitting with just mountains of bags and sleeping bags and food and all sorts of things they've collected. And two young girls, Izzy Firth, donating items to Maya Ingram, both aged six, who were helping at the collection point at Homebase in Winnell on Sunday.
Pie-making plan gets green light. A controversial plan to turn a shop into a meat pie production facility in Bishop's Waltham has been given the green light. The City Council Planning Committee approved the scheme for 3-4 Trinder Street, Trinder House, I beg your pardon, Free Street. The proposal will see it used by five local butchers to make their meat into pies. However, the plan originally met opposition and 9 letters of objection were sent. Residents were concerned about odours, noise, waste and the traffic impact and said the development was out of character with the area. At the meeting, Fred Dickinson said, "I do believe it's wrong to change it from retail to industrial. My concern is although the conditions will reduce the impact on the environment, it's unlikely to eradicate it, particularly the smell of cooking." All councillors voted in favour of the plan, which is subject to a series of conditions, including a waste management plan.
This is a bit of a tongue twister, really. Families attend 50 fun festival events. Bikers, bell ringers, gardeners, musicians, vintage bus drivers and families made Worthy Festival one of the Winchester's most diverse celebrations. All quarters of the villages have teamed up for the third time to host nearly 50 events across a 9-day programme, which started on Saturday. New events this year include a food festival, plant and produce show, and a clothing swap and swish, organised by Winchester's Action on Climate Change. Families flocked to Kingsworthy's Church Green on Saturday for a folk and jazz festival with performances from Soberton Strummers, Hursley Jammers and Four Marks Folk Band. The WI welcomed Federation Chairman Maureen Leveson for a centenary celebrations. Worthy's Got Talent dazzled judges with song and dance. Performers included Winchester Theatre Arts School, 9-year-old violinist Zoe Kierans, and Pamela Johnson, who told the audience she had taken up singing again at the age of 80. First prize went to Maze Flight, who sang The Wizard and Me from the hit show Wicked. Music, film, talks and walks continued all week with a championship run at Eversley Park on Saturday and the fruit, flower and produce show on Sunday. Worthy's Sport and Social Club has a beer festival all weekend and the programme rounds off with live music, a barbecue and fireworks at King Charles Pub from 8 p.m. on Sunday.
Burglary appeal. Thieves have caused thousands of pounds of damage to a Winchester youth centre in a raid on charities and outreach groups. Doors and windows were smashed, CCTV destroyed and cash stolen from King Alfred Youth Activity Centre in Winnell. Police are appealing for witnesses to the break-in, which took place between 1 p.m. on Sunday and 7:30 a.m. on Monday. The facility in Winnell Valley Road is rented from the Youth Options Charity to Winchester Young Carers, Winnell Rock School and others. Costs are estimated at up to £4,000, but operations in the building are as normal because the thieves only stole CCTV gear and petty cash boxes. Nikki Crooks, Youth Options Resource Manager, said, "Unfortunately, in order to get this measly sum, they have caused thousands of pounds worth of damage, mainly to doors and windows. The intruder alarm and CCTV was also taken in an effort to hide their identity and prevent detection. This has been mindless damage which causes disruption, a potential loss of income and unnecessary stress to users of the centre who might now feel unsettled."
I have a piece entitled Hawks Swoop In, and it's fronted by a photograph of a hawk flying over some ladies' heads who look slightly alarmed at that. A new-look garden at a Winchester care home got off to a flying start with a visit from a team of falconers. Residents, staff and relatives at Colton Care's Abbott's Barton home in Winchester were treated to a one-hour display including an owl, falcon and a hawk from Eastleigh-based Falcon High. The visit marked the end of a major garden makeover which had seen the creation of a larger patio area, new walkways and the planting of new trees and plants. Charles Hubbersty, Colton Care's head gardener, assisted by Abbott's Barton gardener Emily Truman, cut the ribbon to officially open the new garden. Janet Orchard, activity organiser at the home on Worthy Road, said, "The garden looks absolutely fantastic and everyone's delighted. We had a wonderful day with the birds of prey proving particularly popular." Miss Orchard added, "There was lots of interaction between the birds and our residents. This was the fifth visit by Falcon High and it's always one of the highlights of the year. During the day, a raffle was held which raised £137 for the home's adopted charity, Asthma UK. Colton Care also runs another home in Winchester, St Catherine's View on Stanmore Lane.
Rugby star visits hospice. He is the legend whose name is synonymous with the Rugby World Cup of 1995. On the opening weekend of the current tournament, All Black Jonah Lomu dropped in to spend time with poorly youngsters at Naomi House Hospice. The star, who won 63 caps and was the youngest player to play for New Zealand, visited Naomi House in Sutton Scotney as part of his unstoppable tour. Jonah, who scored 4 tries as his county beat England 45-29 in the 1995 World Cup semi-final, toured the newly refurbished hospice hydrotherapy pool, bedrooms, garden and bereavement suite, and met children like Toby Dobson and his parents Lindsay and Alistair from Chandler's Ford. Toby stays at Naomi House for a respite care. After meeting Mr. Lomu, Lindsay said, for Joe Malomu, the visit Naimi House and Jack's place so soon after the new hospice official unveiling has been absolutely fantastic. Toby's dad is a huge rugby fan, so this was a real treat for him. Jonah said, I thought it was an amazing place and a charity with a real nice feel to it. It's an absolute pleasure to meet the children and families and staff that make use of the facilities. And there's a lovely picture of staff and children, some of whom are in wheelchairs, with the star and Aidan Neal, who's 2 years old, in the middle, holding hands with Chris Neal, his dad, and he's looking absolutely amazed because he's kicked a rugby ball. It's a lovely picture.
School hears from MP. The next generation of politicians and voters were given a lesson in democracy from Winchester and Chandler's Ford MP Steve Brine in the run-up to their own school elections. He spoke to 120 pupils aged 9 to 11 at St Bede CE Primary School, Winchester, about his work in Westminster and the role of MPs. Mr Brine, re-elected last May with an increased majority, also shared handy tips on how to get elected. The children got a chance to grill the MP on his work in the House of Commons and how he got into politics during the visit last Friday. The visit came just days before the school year's six pupils were due to hold elections for responsibility posts, including head girl and boy, house captain and heads of sport, music and the library. As well as giving the youngsters practical advice about elections, Mr. Brine's visit was a chance for children to learn more about fundamental British values of democracy and free speech, now part of the national curriculum. Mr. Brine said, I love doing these sessions to help educate young people about what an MP does and what Parliament is for. This was extra special because I was able to give them some tips ahead of their upcoming school elections. Democracy is a fundamental British value, which is now a key part of the national curriculum, and I hope an MP coming to school helps to bring this alive. Head teacher Sarah Duck said, it's really important that children understand how democracy works and what elected leaders do. Visit like this helped to bring it to life, particularly in the run-up to the school's own elections for positions of responsibility. St Bede CE Primary School in Gordon Road has 445 pupils, and there's a picture of just some of the pupils all lined up with MP Steve Brine in the middle.
Jail morale sinks. A source at Winchester Prison said morale is at an all-time low and accused bosses of poor leadership in the wake of four deaths in the space of 2 months. Mohammed Imami Farashani, 40, became the fourth inmate to die at the jail this summer following Daryl Hargrave, Jason Payne and Father's Rights campaigner Hayden Burton. A source at the jail said, experienced staff have been replaced with new staff and morale is at an all-time low. The only time senior management come out of their offices is when there's been a death in custody. I think when you have a workforce that is disinterested and feels unsupported, it's hard to give as much to the job and to do it to the best of your ability. The senior management need to show leadership. They need to be there when things get difficult. And staff want to see senior management showing them support and being part of the team they lead. It's a them and us situation at the moment, and that in some small way may have contributed to the deaths this year. The Independent Monitoring Board raised fears about an atmosphere of gang culture and increased boredom at the jail. In December, it said, it's very much a work in progress and much remains to be done. The report noted concerns of a lack of staff as the ratio between officers and inmates dropped from 1 to 22 to 1 to 30. According to the Prison Officers Association, working conditions in prisons nationally have deteriorated and have seen a rise in violence towards staff and inmates. The POA said serious assaults between inmates is up 38% in the last year and that assaults on staff are up by 48%. The number of deaths in such a short time is unusual but not unique. We've had a number of prisons experience similar tragic situations. He added that budget cuts, staff under pressure, increased violence between prisoners and against staff form part of the problem, and also added that the use of legal highs may be a contributory factor. Governor David Rogers said, "The staff working at Winchester are dedicated and hard-working. My team of governors and senior staff are visible within the prison, ready to listen and talk to staff or prisoners about matters that may concern. We have increased staff training opportunities, including mental health training, to develop their careers and have recruited a number of new prison officers."
Uni in UK top 10. The University of Winchester has been ranked the third best in the South East for teaching quality, placing it higher for teaching excellence than Oxford. It is now the highest ranked in Hampshire for its teaching, giving a score of 84.2% for teaching excellence, just behind the universities of Buckingham and Surrey. The rankings come as the Times and the Sunday Times Good University Guide was published at the weekend. This high score means Winchester came higher in the South East for teaching quality than the University of Oxford. Southampton Solent University and the University of Southampton came 15th and 16th out of 19 universities in the South East. The University of Winchester was 10th of the 105 universities in England for teaching excellence. Vice-Chancellor Professor Joy Carter said, "This is fantastic news, not just for the university, but for the city and the county too. To be third in the South East and 10th in England for teaching and excellence is something we are incredibly proud of."
Police investigate injury. Winchester police are trying to establish how a man was left with a fractured eye socket and a cut to his face. The man was found with the injuries at his home address at 6 a.m. on Friday, September the 4th, police said. He had last been seen by friends leaving Alfie's bar on the Broadway at 2 a.m. He was not injured at that time. The man, aged 25, who has not been named, has no recollection of his journey home. Police officers are trying to establish whether he sustained the injuries accidentally or was assaulted, as the man's phone was later located in the street a short distance away. The man is described as white and was wearing dark trousers, black boots, blue cardigan, faded dark green waxed barber-style jacket. Anyone who saw the man or anything suspicious in the Chesil Street, Dell Road or Highcliffe area of Winchester should contact Police Staff Investigator Lynn Levitt on 101, quoting an enormously long number, which I'm really not going to go into. I think Lynn Levitt on 101 might do the trick.
Saints legend starts 10-kilometre race. Excuse me. Hundreds of runners were welcomed by Southampton football legend as they took on one of Hampshire's most varied long-distance runs. Former Saints manager Laurie McNamee started the Hursley 10-kilometre race on Sunday and was joined by Nick Holmes, who played under him in the 1976 Cup final. All 473 runners finished the multi-terrain course at Home Farm Estate, starting and finishing at John Keeble School in good health. Nearly 150 youngsters took part in a fun run that afternoon as part of the event organised by Hursley Village Community Association. Ant Gritton won the main race with a time of 33 minutes and 44 seconds, winning his crown back from Matt King. Matt King, Lydia Bowing, Andrew Lewis and Leanne Waters competed the top three for both sexes, with Alan Graham and Caroline Carr, the fastest Hursley villagers. Next year's race will be its 10th anniversary.
Community conference places still available. Places are still available at a conference on how rural communities can deliver services and protect facilities in the face of local government cutbacks. Communities in Action is being held by the Campaign to Protect Rural England and Hampshire at the Wessex Conference Centre, Spalshott College, on October the 9th. The event, which is aimed at community groups, businesses, voluntary organisations and local authorities, starts at 9:15 a.m. and ends with a buffet lunch at 1 p.m. Rosalind Rutt, a CPRE Hampshire volunteer, said, "Because of cutbacks in funding, there's a lot of pressure on the local facilities and services. We want to get a dialogue going to encourage rural communities to become more self-sufficient and by working together. And that conference is on October the 9th at Sparshot College.
And that concludes the extracts for this week. Thank you to our editing, copying and dispatch and studio preparation teams. And thanks to our readers, Nikki Baring.
Goodbye.
Richard Martin.
Goodbye.
And Norma York.
Goodbye.
And from me, Tom Williams, goodbye, and do enjoy the week ahead. Please post your memory sticks back as soon as possible in the yellow wallet. And when you put your label in the wallet, please ensure the cord attached to the memory stick is fully inside. Thank you.